I don't know how to do that.
Hey, we're all there! Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I think we need to hear this.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Now listen, you're listening to the Castilbrot podcast with a K. Don't worry about other podcasts. Let them gawp, let them gape. Yes, did you know that we're available on castilbrot.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audioboo? Well, you do now. Good, isn't it? Ha!
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's a podcast live with me, Christian Corley, and him, Brian Turnover. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Hey, and we're doing it live this week because basically one of the reasons why we don't do it live every week is that James has a bandwidth issue, and unfortunately James can't join us this week as he's organising some kind of student union party or something. I don't know what he's doing. Well, he can't make it this week anyway, so he's going to be watching. Hi, James. And hello to anyone else who's watching. I don't know how many viewers we've got at the moment. Because my microphone's in the way. Nope, none. But you'll be watching it later on. Oh no, there's no one out there! You will, of course, be able to watch this later. And you may indeed be listening to this later. This is one that we've recorded previously, and we performed it live. I use the word perform with quotes, inverted commas there, because obviously there's a minimal lack of performance involved. It's basically just talking. And usually Brian also interjects as well, but so far he's just leaving it all to me. So that's nice.
I'm enjoying that, actually. It's been fun so far. I'm the one viewer this week. So
you're the viewer, yeah.
The viewer. It's really good.
I noticed you're wearing a jacket and you've got it zipped up, so is it a bit parky where you are?
It is. It's actually better today than it has been. I think we're actually in double digits today. Okay. Yeah, so currently it's 27 degrees. However, it's supposed to be a low of -2 this evening. So
right,
yeah. Okay. So, but it has been overnight. It's been in the minus. In the morning, it's been about 0 to 3 on my ride into work.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, it's been a little chilly yourself because I see you're wearing a scarf as well.
Yeah, it is quite cold here. It's not quite as bad as yours. It's strange. It gets warmer in the night.
Really? That is strange.
Yeah, we get cloud cover. I think it's something to do with being coastal. Clouds just arrive. Don't know. Yesterday we went down to York. Spent a few hours there. Went to the fudge kitchen, bought some fudge, watched it being made. Twins loved it. And coming back, temperature fell to probably 2.5 degrees. But, you know, by 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, it was up to 7 or 8 degrees. So now this is centigrade, Celsius. I have no idea what that is in your Imperial Fahrenheit.
Let's look it up.
Oh, we're doing that, are we? Okay.
Sure. You're at 7 degrees.
Unicorn versions with the service.
Okay, so your 7 degrees is 44 degrees of our Fahrenheit.
Okay, now, 44.
Yes, so
that seems high, doesn't it?
It does seem high. my 3 degrees is -16 of your Celsius. Right now, I'm what did I say? I was 27?
Yeah.
So right now, we're -2 of your degrees. My God, how do you guys live in that kind of temperature?
I have no idea. you know, a few years ago, last time you were here in the UK, and you stayed with us, and then a few months later, you had a bad winter, and we had a bad winter as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my corner of the UK, we're kind of an inlet because, you know, we're at the mouth of a river and it is quite mild a lot of the time. And even when it's really, really cold and snows a lot, often the salt in the air dissipates it, so we don't get much snow. But in 2010, either side of Christmas, and there's probably about 2 weeks where it didn't snow, we had like 2 weeks of snow and ice. It was really, really heavy. And, you know, it dropped to as far as -3. That's how cold it got where we are. So we get away with it. I'm not going to argue with that. I'm glad we do.
I remember that because I remember It was freezing there. For everybody out there listening, generally when I would go over to the UK, it was in November for my birthday, and that's when it was that one really cold day, and I didn't prepare for that. I mean, because I was there a couple of years before in November, and it was cold, but it wasn't bad. It was passable. But man, even I remember Anthony was even freezing when we got out to Redcar, and he's in. You're both in a coastal town, aren't you?
Yeah, he's more of a city. We've got the Tees in the mouth of the Tees, where he's more inland.
Yeah, yeah. It was just that bitterness just coming off the ocean. That was really cold. But hey.
Yeah, so scarves ahoy. Now, we're going to keep things easy this week's podcast with a K. We don't have any formatted structure. It's purely due to the fact that I forgot to invite a guest. So sorry, everyone. Half term last week. Children at nursery for the first year, so trying to get my head around this whole holiday thing, and them suddenly being there for a week that I wasn't expecting. Working on Casterbus and various freelance pursuits, so yeah, my fault. Hold my hand up, and my other one, it's my fault. Sorry, Brian. Sorry, James, if you're watching. We do have a viewer now as well, so hello to the viewer, and feel free to leave us a comment.
You mean hi, James?
Yeah,
probably. Hey, James.
So listen, I was watching The Day of the Doctor last night with Bruce, and he was interested by the 11th Doctor and Clara, because he knows Clara, because he's only really watched the 12th Doctor.
Really interesting. Okay.
Yeah, he's watched a bit of the 9th Doctor up to the end of Ends in London, World War III. That's as far as he's got. Although we didn't watch The Unquiet Dead, because it's a bit too scary for him, I think. So we're watching it, and most of the time he's kind of vaguely interested in what's going on, but because he didn't really recognise the Doctors, he only really knows Clara. So a lot of it is just talking, isn't it, The Day of the Doctor? For an anniversary celebration, there's an awful lot of talking about things in there. And, there's some interesting philosophies about the whole time war and everything surrounding it, and the guilt and how the Doctor dealt with it, or how anyone might deal with those kind of things. It doesn't fail in any way. It's just, it isn't a big kind of serious action-packed caper or adventure or romp or anything. It's a little bit more low-key than maybe we were expecting, or maybe even what we might recall, because there's some very, high energy or high emotion moments in there. And I said to him, look, we're going to see all the Doctors in a minute, all of them. They're going to be there. I was talking about half an hour in the future, but, I was just trying to keep him interested. And again, he was very, the only bits he was interested in really were the bits with the Daleks and the bits with the Zygons when the Zygons were naked. That's about it, for obvious reasons. And we were watching the War Council bit, and he's completely bored through that bit, even though he's seen all the Doctors going, Doctor, I've seen that Doctor. And then there's the bit with the eyebrows, and he goes, Grey Hair Doctor!
That's what he calls him?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so, and he wants to watch a grey-haired doctor tonight, but we've watched all the grey-haired doctors that he's allowed to watch, so we're going to have to find something else to watch.
So he has a concept that there are other doctors.
Yeah.
He doesn't quite seem interested in them.
No.
Just Mr. Greyhair.
Yeah, Mr. Greyhair. Mr. Greyhair with a white suit, not the other grey-haired ones. Yeah.
With the white suit?
Oh, with the black suit, isn't it?
Black suit, there you go.
Hmm?
He froze on
black
me.
Suit. Was there a delay there? I did it. Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah.
That's so true. That was quite interesting how he sees the Doctor at this stage. I'm also worried that it's maybe put him off the three Doctors and the five Doctors. But
well, maybe you shouldn't start with the three or the five Doctors. Maybe you should show him some of those Doctors before seeing those adventures. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, perhaps you're right. Perhaps you're right. I think we're going to watch Dalek tonight, or Father's Day, I think. I forget which. He likes.
How old is he now?
Three and three quarters.
Three and three quarters. Jeez,
I was very nearly four.
Yeah, I mean, I I was probably 9 or 10 when I started watching the show, so I wonder how he grasps the concept of there being different doctors at this age. Like, you know, because I remember very much, yeah. I was very into Tom Baker, and I liked Peter Davison, but I knew of John Pertwee, but it's just my adult memories of that are, yeah, where there were these two. Like, for instance, I didn't know about regeneration when I was a kid, because just watching it on PBS, no. You just watched whatever doctor was on. So for me, it felt very much like, I always liken it to Darren from Bewitched. You know, they just had an actor switch for the main for Darren, rather, and you just rolled with it, you know? So sure. I remembered, when I was a kid, I remembered thinking when Peter Davison was in the role, I thought, well, this is weird. I mean, he's not even like the other guy. Like, they didn't even try, but whatever, he's still kind of cool, you know? So I didn't have a concept. So I'm wondering, like, does Bruce get the concept? Does he understand?
Oh, I don't know. Well, there's the start of a regeneration, isn't there, in The Day of the Doctor? So I told him that was that doctor turning into the short-haired doctor. So he maybe does, but he probably doesn't. I mean, for me, you know, I grew up when Tom Baker was a doctor, and he was the Tom until I was nearly six. So, you know, that's like my entire life, one person's a doctor. So, you know, when Peter Davison came along, that was quite a surprise. I'm quite sad, so sad that I still get to watch Metropolis. So I don't know, for Bruce, it's different. I mean, you know, I've got the advantage of being able to observe and see how he tends to react to it, but he's really only seen two doctors. He hasn't seen Matt Smith, really, other than in The Day of the Doctor and possibly The Bells of St. John. And he hasn't seen David Tennant other than in The Day of the Doctor. And actually, he'd never seen John Hurt before, like everyone else. And so he's really only got two doctors that he's aware of.
I mean, it's a very interesting thing to watch them grow up and see how they take to the show and what they take away from it that you didn't, or if they're going to like the same things that you like, and so on. I'm going through the series right now with my girlfriend from day one on up. Now, she's seen all the new series, but she wants to know about the past. So we're in the Hartnell era right now. And she seems to be enjoying it, but there are certain times where we're just like, it's a little too late to start this, we'll probably both fall asleep kind of thing, because they're a bit of a slower pace. But it's interesting to watch her watch those early ones and not see the reaction that I was expecting, which most new series fans would sit there and go, this is slow and boring. You know, she's actually just sitting there and enjoying it for what it is. You know, she's liking the character, she's finding the humor pretty funny, and just really into the situations. So that's I'm really glad to see that. She even, like, you probably are aware of this, Christian, because I posted on it on Facebook, but we watched, which one was it now? The Censorites. Something happened to the Doctor now, and we're in the Reign of Terror, and in the beginning of the episode one, he gets knocked unconscious, the Doctor gets knocked unconscious, and he gets left in a burning house. Mm-hmm. And then, so she sit there and she said, oh no, the Doctor's in that house. And she said, man, he regenerates a lot earlier than I thought he would. You know, and she knows that that's not the case, but I was like, okay, wow, you're getting into this to the point that you're just like goofing around with it too. I was really enjoying that. So that was really funny. There was a different thing in the Censorites, but, so it's quite enjoyable to watch that. Plus I'm watching it. And I have to say, I miss the fact that a lot of the storytelling was on the adventure in those days, rather than like personal character drama. And that's a bad thing in the new series. I understand that that's a really good thing, but it would be so interesting to see a story in the new series where you just see them running around the same sets, running from the danger, just dealing with the adventure at hand, where there's no personal stake in it for the main characters, you know, aside from, we're here, these people need help, let's help them. You know, it would be very interesting to see how a new series story would be with just them dealing with just the actual adventure, just the alien threat. Or even just them being stuck in a situation. I mean, how often do we see stories now where there's just a TARDIS malfunction and...
Very rare.
Yeah, like for instance, the Space Museum. That's going to be the next one. No, excuse me, that's the next one I want after listening to The Crusade. And I just realized the whole beginning of that episode, the main characters are just wandering around without anybody even knowing that they're there. That's such a cool thing, such a cool concept. And rather than deal with like character drama, I'd like to see such interesting concept and just the adventure, you know, or even a story that takes place within the same set. So many, I was watching a lot of Tom Baker episodes, and some of them just took place within the same, like, four sets in the same building. Mm. Like, they never even got out of that. Like you mentioned that Day of the Doctor. I mean, they're all over the place in that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see, close it down a little bit, rein it in.
One of the things that Classic Who did really well was, it was less about the Doctor unless you went to Gallifrey, but that time wasn't spent on the companion or any of the companion's relationships. It was a portrait of evil, of various mad men, you know, like Solon in The Brain of Mobius, or there's a lot of Stallman in Inferno, or some other similar lunatic, Harrison Chase in The Seeds of Doom. And I know that, you know, those stories were a lot longer, but there's no reason why modern Doctor Who shouldn't spend time focusing on the mad people behind, you know. Take Lazarus Experiment is one of the few modern examples I can think of that does that.
Yeah, that's true, and I think that's a big thing. And again, I think what it needs to be, because I'm not saying like that the character drama, the personal companion or doctor drama needs to stop, because obviously that's something that's really getting a huge fan base watching. But it would be interesting to turn that on its head a little bit sometimes. And tell more of those stories of classic villain pieces. For instance, too many of the stories just seem like when the villains come in, even if you bring in this great classic villain that we've been waiting to see again, too many times they seem to me like they're just completely a sideline to what's really going on. Oh, we have to deal with Clara losing Danny in this story, but you know, there's this other thing that we have to stop too. But Clara, you've lost Danny, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
It's a shame. It's really a shame, especially since there are a lot of rich characters, both new and old, that were created for villains that just could use a little bit more treatment.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't
disagree with that. Listen, we've heard today, speaking of modern people and companions, that Shona McCulloch, who was a character in Last Christmas, played by Faye Marseille, who made an impact with some Doctor Who fans. Faye Marseille says that she will not be returning, or that Shona won't be returning to Doctor Who, is what she actually said. It's not a definitive statement by any means, I don't think, although it does contradict something else that we've heard, but we can't go into any detail on that. So, the idea was that there might be two companions this year, but as I wait for that page to load up in order to get the quotes for you, dear listener/reader/viewer, and I basically ramble on and on, waiting for that to load, whilst looking as if I kind of know what I'm talking about, which I think reasonably successfully works, because, you know, we've got a viewer that isn't Brian, so hooray! And he or anyone else watching this can leave comments, and even if you're listening to this or watching it on delay, you can still leave comments either on the Hangouts or on YouTube or on Casterbus itself, where this podcast will be appearing at some point in the very near future, probably before we finished, actually.
Do you think we should mention, just out of fairness, we probably have one viewer because we didn't really announce that we were doing a video podcast today?
Oh, yeah. Will you do that?
Okay, I just did. So there you go. Thank you to the one viewer who's watching right now for actually finding us, and everybody else who's listening to it later. Sorry for the last-minute notice that we didn't even give you. Next time we'll be better at that.
Yeah, basically the reason for that is that it does take a bit of time to edit the podcast, especially when there's mistakes in there, which usually happens when McLean's involved. And hi, James. And I, when we do it this way, we do it live. We've got all the sound effects ready. We can just hit the buttons. You know, I can go,
"Greetings, ladies and gentlemen."
Say thanks again to John Guiler, and you know, then it works almost. I say almost like a real radio studio, and it's quite exciting, you know. But The you know, when we edit it together, it's easy to get kind of trapped into, you know, sometimes when we pause and I say something to Brian and I have to wait for him to respond for quite a while, either due to transatlantic things, you know, because he's going through that big old cable that runs from UK, then from Ireland all the way to New York, and then goes to all those other places, and then it takes ages for Brian's response to come back. I know that doesn't happen now, but that's how it is sometimes with Brian. So sometimes it's that. Sometimes this message takes a long time to get to Brian's brain and back out of his mouth, because he's got such a lot of .2 stuff going on in there, and he's, you know, he's planning his latest prop building exercise or something. You know, that kind of thing. So I tend to, like, I get rid of some of those things. I, like, pull those bits out and delete them and bring everything closer together, and then I stick the sound at the beginning, the sound at the end, and it all goes a bit kind of crazy and OTT. So that is why, when we do it this way, it's a little bit more exciting, because I don't know whether I should stop talking or not, and there's few people to interrupt me this week as well, and it just makes it easier to produce, basically.
Did you find your quotes?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, thanks. says Faye Marseille, who's interviewed by Den of Geek, she says, and I don't need to do an accent for this, because Faye Marseille was born a couple of towns over that way, and we may share an ancestor. Don't know. It's possible. She says, with Shauna, there's been no talk of her returning, so, which is interesting. She also says that she loved working on Doctor Who, that they're wonderful to work with and incredibly talented, and Peter Capaldi, God, I fancy him so much, he's amazing. So there you go. So she seems like she'd like to do it again, but apparently so far isn't, at least publicly. Anyway, nothing that she's allowed to talk about. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, Brian? Do you think, does Doctor Who need another companion, another female companion?
I would like another companion for sure, to be honest.
In the TARDIS, though, not, you know,
in the TARDIS, yeah, completely in the TARDIS, completely traveling. Okay, I spoke about this for Series 8, where I said I would like to see them kind of go off and not come back to Earth for a little bit, or maybe hit Earth like once in a blue moon during the season. Let's do something different that we haven't already seen. I also think there needs to be something to break up the dynamic of Clara and the Doctor. I have to be honest and say, when we found out that Clara was going to be in Last Christmas, which seemed so obvious, I was really hoping it wasn't true, because I loved the way that she left at the end of Series 8. I thought that was so great. I love the fact that they both had this misunderstanding, and they were effectively doing what they thought was best for the other by letting them go, and I thought that would be such a cool ending, such a great way to see this character leave. And it doesn't mean that we never have to see them again.
Also, Moffat puts himself in the position where he has to depart a character twice.
Yeah.
Well, he did the same thing with Amy, and he's putting himself in that position with Clara. Arguably, he's done it with River Song as well, depending on how you look at that.
Yeah. And I just feel like, you know, the whole relationship that they had through Series 8 was really up and down, and that was a bit of a bummer for me. I didn't really enjoy that, because it brought me back to, like, Peter Davison and Colin Baker's era, where the companions all just were bickering and moaning and didn't really want to be there. And I don't enjoy that. I want to watch the show where these characters are just going out and having fun. And I, you know, another big thing for me, I just watched Destiny of the Daleks. And Romana has the Daleks come face-to-face with her. And she gets captured and she's interrogated. And Romana is a very strong, independent character. You know, she's brilliant. But here, she's actually terrified of the Daleks. Why? Because Daleks are terrifying. They're going to kill her. You know, they're just, that's what they do. We need to see a little bit more of that. I'm a little tired of everybody just laughing off the threats or acting, I'm so big because I'm with the Doctor. You can't do anything to me. I think we need to see, and we had that before in the series. I don't know why it went away. I think that's a big thing. So what I'd like to see is, I'd like to see a companion come in that breaks up the dynamic, makes everybody have a little bit more fun, that isn't a love interest, doesn't pull a Martha and become the third wheel kind of feeling. Just something interesting, just fun, kind of like Ian, Barbara, and Susan, where maybe it's not exactly the best situation when they first get on board because maybe they don't want to be there. Like Ian and Barbara got kidnapped, maybe they get stuck with this new person, but soon they become friends. I could deal with a little bit of that in the beginning, so long as by the end we're watching something fun, you know? But something to break up the dynamic, and something to show that you know, traveling in the TARDIS isn't always just going to the next life-threatening adventure. You know, there was a time when we were told that, you know, we never saw it because, or rather, we rarely saw it because it wasn't important to see. But they have good stops as well. They can stop for a day at the beach, you know, and have fun. I mean, if you're going to travel with a guy from outer space and all he's going to do is take you from one battle to the next, why are you going to go every time? There's got to be some fun in there too, you know? Sure. So that's what I want to see. I want to see something break up the tension. I don't want to see them bickering so much. I want to see it be fun again. I know it's going to be tough with Danny's death looming over them, which we'll see what they do with that. But, and I'd like to see somebody else come in because I'd like to see some new blood. It's feeling stale.
Okay. Well, I've just checked, and we have at least one viewer, so I've identified the person concerned, who is probably should know better. But hello, hi there. And I wouldn't say it's stale. I think it's probably run its course already. So what they do with it from here is a we'll have to wait and see. It's interesting that there seems to be less Moffat involvement in the script writing this time around, so maybe that will bring some nice new life into the adventures and the companion-doctor relationship. We shall see, I dare say. Now, listen, I was thinking earlier, and it's partially related to the collection of paraphernalia that you can see behind Brian. I was wondering how Brian, you spent your time as a Doctor Who fan between 1996 and 2005.
Mm-hmm. How did I spend? Oh, wow. A lot of that time, probably around 94, 95, is when I kind of picked the show back up again. You know, I watched when I was a kid, and then it kind of disappeared from PBS. So I picked it up again probably around 94, 95, which means a lot of that time between then and 2005 was spent collecting as much of the episodes as I could find, because at that point I hadn't seen them all, buying all the VHSs, taping them off of PBS, and even, obviously, in that time, DVDs had come out. I was reading as much as I could in Doctor Who magazine. I bought Jean-Marc Lefissière's TARDIS Data Bank book because that gave me a whole breakdown of everything. Like, if I watched a particular story that had a villain and I'm like, I feel I should know this person, flip to the page for that person and go, oh, there are other stories for this guy. So that was very handy. and of course, you know, like anybody else, when you get into something pretty heavily like this, you want to collect as much as you can. So there was a magazine out at the time, two of them. Oh, nice. Yeah, it's very handy. I loved that book. So handy. So well done. He's a nice guy, too. I had a couple chats with him over the years about that book. So
he was the first person we interviewed for Custodes.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, because I remember you go to his site. There used to be a link to the interview on his site.
Yeah.
Cool. But no, there were two catalogs. Back in the day before you ordered things over the internet, if I can say that, there were two.
What? What are you talking about?
I know, weird, right? There was 800 Trekker, and there was another.
They're still going, aren't they, 800 Trekker?
No, they closed long ago.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I'm sure I've seen them online somewhere.
No, you couldn't have. They had a warehouse based in Reading, Pennsylvania, which I visited in like 95, 96. And since then, I mean, the catalog is defunct. It's got to be. Certainly I don't see the catalog around, and I know you can't order the things from them anymore that I used to order. 800trekker.com. Wow, the website still has a link, but no, it's a dead website. The other thing was Starlog. Now, I don't know if this is coincidental or not, but there was another. It was kind of like a Star Trek kind of heavy catalog, but there was a store in one of our big malls here in King of Prussia. That was also called Starlog, and I don't know if it was connected to this catalog or not, but they used to have a transporter in the back, so my friend and I used to love to go in there, because it was just like, while it was a transporter, it looked more like the transmats from Ark in Space, and anything Star Trek. That's where we found all these Doctor Who books and all sorts of things there. It was a really cool store. It was so short-lived in that mall, though, which was a shame, because naturally we liked it, which means it was short-lived. One of my favorite things, though, was when I did go to 800 Trekker, the warehouse in Reading, My hope was to pick up another one of these, which, well, you can see that there. But this is the TARDIS key that was used by Paul McGann in the TV movie, because they bought their TARDIS key from 800 Trekker, and so did I. When I went there, they did have them, so I did buy another one. But not only that, they had a replica police box there. And it was the first time I'd ever seen a police box, a replica or otherwise. And the guy who ran the, who was the manager there, rather, I guess, he was like, "You want to go inside?" I was like, "Yeah." So it was the coolest thing. I went inside, and it's such a silly thing. I went in, I closed the door, and I went in, I closed the door, and I felt like.
Okay, go tell mommy.
It was a black box inside. There was no TARDIS console room whatsoever. My friends and my brother all stood outside wondering what the heck was taking me so long to get out. But for me, it was this magical moment of fandom being inside that box. And of course, now I own one, and that magic has not gone away. I still love going in that thing. And we've lost Christian, as you can see. So what'd you think?
Yeah!
Oh, I regaled him with my...
Dear me. I have no idea how much of that you heard. I wouldn't like to say, really. But I suspect the mute function didn't work again.
No, so I did. It was cute. But I tried to talk over it.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, it was a sterling job. I could hear all the way. Brilliant. Brilliant work. Good man. Yes.
Oh, thanks.
Well, you know, for me, I rediscovered Doctor Who in the strangest way, actually. I purchased a Doctor Who magazine special in 1994. And then a few months later, I went on holiday. And basically what happened is I got this Doctor Who magazine special. And then don't know why she's giving me that. Yeah, so I got this Doctor Who magazine special, and it kind of set me off back in love with the show, which I hadn't really done anything about since it finished. I kind of drifted away. Just expected to come back, then got to the point where I don't think it's going to be on again, is it? So when I got this issue with Doctor Who magazine, which was a summer special, and it had Survival and An Unearthly Child in it, like features on both. In fact, there was a reverse. It was a flip over. One was printed up backwards. You know how, as a bit of a gimmick, people used to print things backwards. So you'd flip it over. So you'd have half a magazine. You'd have two halves of a magazine, basically. Two halves of a short magazine instead of one more larger focused. Or maybe you could have two smaller focused ones. But yeah, you get the drift. And that set me off. So, you know, this is in 1994, so about the same time that you started getting back into Doctor Who as well. And I was buying, you know, that Universal Data Bank here, this one. Yeah, that was bought in 1994. I would spend time in bookshops in near my college and here in Redcar and in Middlesbrough and buy Doctor Who books where I could find them, more or less. So at one point, there was too many Doctor Who books. And I had to be really, really spend ages looking for the one to buy, whether it was a reference book or whether it was a new adventure or even if it was a Target. I'd spend ages deliberating on which one I was going to buy, what was going to be my priority order. And I had a list or two going as well. And so most of my time, and as I mentioned last week, there was VHS videos being purchased as well. But probably I did more reading than watching. And I probably did an awful lot of reading of this from cover to cover, which is an unusual thing to do with an encyclopedia.
Yeah, oh yeah. And I'll tell you, in the beginning, it was probably the same for me because, you know, I was stuck with whatever content was on PBS. So you'd get maybe a new story, once a week, and then maybe they would change their programming or something like that. So that book was my main guide. And then finally, when the VHSs started to get released, that was... I just delved right in. As a matter of fact, my friend and I, we would do this thing where we would go to the store and we only had enough money to buy like two each. But of course, at that point, there was a lot to choose from, thankfully. Yeah. But we would see and it was like, okay, well, I don't have these four, but I can only buy two. And he's like, well, I don't have those four either. So why don't I buy two, you buy two, and then we'll just copy each other's. So this way we start, our collection was store-bought and copies for quite a while, which was great. I mean, that's how it was. Fandom was taping it off air, taping it off VHS, and reading about it in Doctor Who magazine or the Universal Databank. And, man, that thing is still a great book, as a matter of fact. If people can get their hands on that book and you want to learn more about the classic series, maybe you're a new series fan or just new to the show, period, it's still a fantastic book because it's everything you need to know about the classic series. You know, we won't have one like that for the new series until the new series ends, even though Gary Russell did do one, which is kind of handy. Obviously, it's incomplete because the new series is still going.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that the Universal Databank, so great, such a handy guide.
Well, this is a well-thumbed copy. You can see that. It was, you know, it's pristine when I bought it, and it's been read a lot. Look at the spine there. Look, that's how often it's been read. It's been read heavily from cover to cover. And in conjunction with the program guide as well, also by Jean-Marc Lefissier, it's certainly filled in some blanks for me and can do the same for you, dear listener. Reader.
For me, it was 2004 when all this started happening. Although I had that key since probably, I want to say 96, 95, 96, but 96 is sounding a little bit more proper. All of this stuff started happening in 2004 because for years I wanted a sonic screwdriver. I remember making one. I still had it. I don't even know where it is now, but I still had it for the longest time out of some kind of socket screwdriver, you know,
that you could twist
the collar and a thing would pop up. It just reminded me of sonic screwdriver. But to me, it was like the coolest thing in the world because it was my sonic screwdriver, you know? Then all of a sudden one day I just was like, I want one. People can buy lightsabers. People can buy Han Solo blasters. Like, there's gotta be a sonic screwdriver out there somewhere. And, I did find one. I forget who made it. It might've been an 800 Trekker thing. It might've been somebody else, but it was just a solid, piece of metal that had been chrome plated. So there were no moving parts, no nothing. And then eventually I found the RPF.com where somebody was doing a run of custom made, Tom Baker sonic screwdrivers. And, That was it. That was like the holy grail to me. I jumped on that thread. I jumped on that forum, which I was not a member of. And once I got that, it was kind of like, it's a weird thing when there are a million props from this TV show that are just so awesome that I would like to have. But to me, the holy grail was always Tom Baker's sonic screwdriver. So you get that one, you get the main piece first. Where do you go from there? You know, it's like there's nothing to strive for aside from just going, well, these things are cool. I mean, obviously now the TARDIS, the police box I have, that was an unattainable thing for me usually. Who would have thought I'd ever own that kind of thing? So now that's another one. But it was just kind of one of those things like, wow, I've got that thing I needed. So for a little while, I was very happy with that. And then I just, when the new series came about, it was, okay, well, clearly I need this new sonic screwdriver. You know, I need the psychic paper. I need all these other things. And I had gotten a few various other pieces throughout the years prior to the new series. But, I mean, it really was only a year in there, you know. So, yeah, that was how I spent my time collecting Daypool toys.
Yeah.
Because we never had them. So they were – it was – everything was new to me well after you guys had seen it. Like it was way later than these things were ever released. As a matter of fact, I remember when I first saw Time of the Ranny. I thought Doctor Who was still running. I thought, oh my God, this TV show that I loved as a kid, this thing is new, it's still going. And then I saw at the end that it was 1989, I'm like, oh, never mind, it's not still going. But it was such a weird feeling because I didn't know that guy. I'd never seen that Doctor before, you know? Sylvester McCoy was completely new to me.
Yeah, I'm surprised you managed to give Time of the Ranny 2 mentions this week. Or was that me rehearsing before? I forget now. Anyway, look, here's my day, Paul Tom Baker.
Nice.
Now,
missing the thumb, I see.
Missing a thumb? Yeah, he's missing a thumb. He's had a hard life, this Tom Baker, because what he does is that he used to star in videos where I'd do a really bad impersonation of John Guiler before I'd heard of John Guiler. And say things like, would you like a jelly baby? And that kind of thing. And what he does most of the time is sit on a shelf. But he has, you know, he has this very kind of, he has an issue, basically. And this will tickle you, because his issue is, he's unable to sit. He can't handle heights. He keeps falling.
Oh, obviously, no, that's
yeah,
terrible.
Totally. You know, he doesn't change when he lands, but I can't put him anywhere high up because he just falls.
That's awful.
So yeah, so that's why he's my only Daypole, Tom Baker, my only Daypole Doctor Who figure, basically.
People think I'm nuts, but I'll be honest. When Character Options started making theirs, I sold off all my Daypole toys.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's like, I'm not one of those collectors that's going to look at something and go, "That's going to be worth money years from now. I'm going to hold on to that and sell that, and I'm sitting on a nest egg." I'm just not going to do that. You know, like, to me it was, well, somebody else will probably enjoy these, so I sold them to somebody for just, like, a fair, here you go, take my hands price. You know, I the Character Options ones look more like the characters. Tom actually has a scarf on, you know, like, that's huge. But the funny thing is I never even wanted to collect the Character Options toys. That was somebody bought me a gift of them, and that started me down this bad road. But then I've kind of put that on hold lately because the props are more my speed. So it's kind of funny how collecting things and just anything in general with this fandom has kind of had stages to it. You know, finding the show, learning about the show. Go on.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say is what I found with Doctor Who and a couple of other things, Lego, is that they don't tend to increase in value, they just tend to maintain their value if they're kept in good condition. It has to be something really unusual or rare for it to actually increase in value. That's why those Dalek suits are worth so much.
Yeah.
From the 60s. Well,
I think it's different too with, like, say, the original Star Wars figures or even the Daypool Doctor Who figures versus anything now, because collectors now know. Like, when the original Star Wars figures came out, there were, if you watch some videos from the era, there were people that were buying them and going, these are going to be worth money someday, you know? But everybody was probably looking at them going, whatever, the kids' toys, shut up, go away. But they are. If you kept them minted in the package, they certainly are, and certainly other rare figures absolutely are. But now, everybody's got that mentality, so everybody's got Character Options figures galore still in the package.
Yeah, yeah,
they're
yeah,
not
yeah.
worth anything. You can buy them anywhere still in the package, you know?
I think with the Star Wars one, I think if you were clued up, because the thing with the Star Wars, as you'll probably know, is that there was a big chunk of figures that were available, but they weren't available, so you had to pre-order them, didn't you?
Or mail order. Then wait, just mail order, right?
Yeah, you had to mail order them and wait for them to come. I think it was about 7 characters or something like that. So anyone who's clued up and realized, well, hold on a minute, this is unusual. This might be something worth investing in. But as you say, these days, everyone's buying everything thinking it's going to be worth money. I mean, even, you know, those waiter pieces that I sold last year, they didn't sell for any more than their original value. They just maintained their value. You know, they kept, you know, they've been kept in good condition. They've got the box and everything, so they've just maintained their value. When I sold a load of old space Lego, 10 years ago, to raise funds for getting so people could eat at my wedding, basically, they were basically the same price they were purchased for. With inflation included.
I can imagine things in my collection, like the MFX David Tennant sonic screwdriver, which is the prop that he used in Day of the Doctor, where we started this whole podcast. This was made in a limited run of 500. So I can imagine, even now, certainly, because I've seen them go for more than they originally did, but certainly years from now, this would be something that would at least increase in value just because of the rarity of it. It probably even the rubber toe version, because this again was, I think this was 250. So this was 500 pieces, this was 250 pieces. You know, so something like that I get, but a lot of these toys, they don't have the rarity, and certainly the fact that people aren't taking them out and playing with them, you know, and therefore increasing the value of the other ones because some of these others aren't in perfect condition. It's just not going to happen. But the funny thing is, like, as much as I say that, certainly the where I am now, I could never see parting with those. You know, I don't know what it's going to be like 30 years from now, certainly, but I really just can't see parting with them because to me they mean so much more there in my collection, something, a piece of the history that I can play with myself. Like, it's just It's more than money to me. You know,
I'm gonna cry.
Oh. Yeah, well, no, but I mean, like, this was my holy grail piece. This is it, and this is my third one, because since that original one that I bought, we found out more details. So this was made more exacting. It's tough to make this prop 100% exacting because the original prop disappeared from the BBC archives in the 80s. So there's no pictures. We only have screen caps to go by to try and make this thing. But
so does that have a springy bit in the middle?
Oh yeah, yeah. But this actually, it's got the springy bit. But this one here, this one actually started out as identical to that one. I painted it up to look like season 18, season 19, Peter Davis and Tom Baker's last one. But this one,
oh,
actually has sound in it. Yeah. So I just you can't tell in the photo, but these two, aside from the paint details, they're different models. The end pieces, this one has a screw bottom on because there's a sound module inside here where this one didn't. Okay. I prefer the body type on this one, which is why I've kept it rather than upgrade it, to be honest. But they're so minimally different, it's ridiculous. But the thing is, it's like, I don't know. I just... This was it. This was watching Doctor Who all those years. Somehow the sonic screwdriver to me was just this ultimate device. You know, here's this guy, this hero, and he's got a tool. He doesn't have a lightsaber. He doesn't have a blaster. He doesn't have a sword. He's got a tool. And I don't know what it was about it. It just made it so cool to me. I couldn't see parting with these. It just doesn't... just doesn't make sense to me to sit there and have somebody say, hey, you know what, I want that, I'll give you X for it, and go, you have no idea how long I waited to own those. Why would I sell these now, you know?
Yeah. I can appreciate that. Listen, we've been chatting and hopefully maintaining the level of interest for at least one viewer and indeed listeners later on. So for quite a while, so it's recommendations time, right?
Oh, interesting.
I have
been watching a lot of Doctor Who lately. Outside, of course, other TV shows I've already recommended, like The Blacklist, but I still recommend that. It's still a good show. But I've been watching a lot of Tom Baker, both season 18 and some earlier ones, and it's so tough to just narrow it down to one. But I have to say, aside from the oddity that the Daleks are robots now instead of little mutants inside the body, like when you follow that storyline, I really am enjoying Destiny of the Daleks. I'm on maybe like the last 10 minutes of it right now. I had to stop prior to this, but I love the sets. I love the fact that it was filmed on location, so a lot of the footage just looks really nice, and they do some really interesting camera angles. As a matter of fact, when I think it's the beginning of episode 3, or maybe it's 4, but they have Romana in that tube with the bomb. And when Tom Baker and, I forget his name, but that one rebel that's helping him go up and they see Romana there, there's this brilliant camera pull that they do to kind of show like how dire the situation is. They do it now in movies, you know, but to see it in Doctor Who at that time, I'd forgotten that it was there. And then they do it again on Romana in the tube, and it was such a great thing. So aside from story-wise, it's beautifully shot, that episode, that story rather. So yeah, I would recommend that one right now, Destiny of the Daleks. That was really a fun one for me recently.
Okay. I am, however, going to recommend that you, dear listener, /viewer/reader, whatever your relationship with Castovers is, watch in some way the final episode of Broadchurch. Now, I discovered this week that Broadchurch was originally pitched as a three-part series, a trio of series, and obviously we're at the end of the second one now by Chris Chibnall, and you know, all these episodes are written by Chris Chibnall. David Tennant's obviously the star, Arthur Darvill is in a lot of them, Eve Miles has been in every episode of this series, Lucy Cohu, who played Captain Jack's daughter in Children of Earth, she's in it as well as David Tennant's Alex Hardy's ex-wife. There's some other Doctor Who links in there, and if it is going to be, if there is going to be a third series of Broadchurch, then tonight's episode is the one to watch to find out how they're actually going to wangle it. So however you're watching it, whether you're watching it live tonight or if you're going to watch it later in the week, or however you watch your Broadchurch, and even if you don't watch Broadchurch, it might be interesting to see how they're going to set this up. for a third series. And I'd also briefly recommend as well last week's Midsummer Murders, which had Claire Bloom in it, who was the woman in white in The End of Time, and Naoko Mori from Torchwood, Toshiko Sato. And it was also a jolly good murder mystery as well. So they're my recommendations.
Nice. I have one more. I completely forgot about something I wanted to talk about. I wanted to do it last week or whatever week I couldn't make it. But it's a Pierce Brosnan film that also has Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad. And, oh, I'm going to kill myself because I can't remember this girl's name.
That's slightly now. Extreme. Don't do that.
Yeah, that you're fair enough. I won't do that. Her name, Imogen Poots, or Potts.
All right.
Imogen Poots or Potts. I don't remember what it is. Who is brilliant, by the way. I don't remember ever seeing this girl in something before, but I adore her character in this film. And the film I'm talking about is A Long Way Down.
Okay.
You guys know how much we like Pierce Brosnan here. We think he's brilliant and so on, but he's great in this movie, but this Imogen Potts or Poots, she just steals the show. And I mean, I've watched this movie twice now, actually, just because of how good she is. But what the premise is that these four characters come together on New Year's Eve, which is the biggest night for suicides, and they go to jump off one of the most well-known suicide points in London to jump off this building. And yes, poor Tom Baker, sorry. But by some odd twist of fate, you know, they all kind of go there relatively around the same time and get entangled in each other's lives. And it's a very interesting story. It's not exactly what I thought it was going to be, but it's really good. It's told almost in four, well, not almost, it's told in four chapters, one for each character. But it doesn't take you away from the main story. It's always a progression just from each different person's kind of point of view. But it was a very, very good story. I really enjoyed that. So I want to recommend A Long Way Down. There you go.
Okay.
Sorry, Tom.
There we go. Okay, I'm going to check that out. There's another Pierce Brosnan movie that I spotted recently whose name I can't recall at the moment, which looked interesting. So I'm going to check them both out, actually. And
nice.
Maybe I'll share with you. I just want to say I watched Guardians of the Galaxy last week properly as well and really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Karen Gillan was excellent. She also escaped, so she's probably going to be in the second one. And I like the entire setup, and it was fun as well and didn't take itself too seriously like certain Marvel films do or have done over the years. And also, I've also watched Transformers 4, which is quite easily the best of the Transformers movies. I know there isn't an awful lot of competition. That's why it's not the best Transformers movie, because the best Transformers movie came out in 1986, and they've never improved on that. Yeah. Sorry, Michael Bay, if you're watching. And I know you are our one viewer. So that brings us to the end of this week's Castaways podcast with a K. And now, dear viewer, you know, if James was around and if I had a little bit more time, we might do a kind of after show. But unfortunately, the call of politics means that not on my case, my good wife has to leave in order to serve her local campaign. So that means that we can't do that. So you are going to be blessed with the slightly uncomfortable sight of Brian and I staring while we listen to this. And it's goodbye until next time. Bye-bye.